Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone. It is Friday night, and I am absolutely thrilled to be here. I have somebody that I just have looked up to and followed for a long time. My guest tonight is Timothy Green Beckley, and he will be joining me in a brief moment. But first, I want to just pay tribute to the fabulous astronaut Edgar Mitchell, who passed away Thursday night in West Palm Beach. He was... Yes, it's just very sad. He was such a wonderful man, and I am very sad I never got the opportunity to meet him, but he has accomplished so much in his life. And it was a week of, we had a lot of passings, including somebody, a very dear family member of mine, who passed away Thursday as well. So there must be something going on in the universe, but somewhere there are some happy people, and we just wish Edgar Mitchell's family the best, and he has a wonderful legacy. My guest tonight is just about the coolest guy in ufology, and he's been around for a long, long time, started really delving into this subject in the mid-60s, but he is author of over 30 books. He is an expert. I mean, he just knows everything. MJ-12, he has... you know, talked about or written about the secret prophecy of Fatima. He has interviewed some amazing people. In fact, some of his interviews, one in particular with Ted Phillips, is one of my favorite interviews. And I always play that because every time I listen to it, I hear something more that I can use for my own personal research. Tim has been on UFO Hunters, on Coast to Coast AM, more than 500 radio and TV talk show appearances. It's just amazing. But he has accomplished a lot, and he has a great personality, which makes him so interesting. Plus, he met David Bowie. I mean, how cool is this? I just have to, I'm so excited to talk to you about that, Tim. But last night, he has a great show, and it is something that you guys should listen to. Last night, he interviewed Whitley Strieber and Peter Robbins, who is a very dear person to me. I love Peter. And
what
if you could...
What a combination that was, right? What a combination.
Oh, my Lord. I can't even believe it. And I'm so happy to have you here.
And you know, Erica, before I did the show, okay, I had Whitley, you know, he agreed to do the show like 10 days ago or 2 weeks ago. And I, if I'm doing a 2 or 3 hour program, I like to have a couple of people on, kind of bounce theory, you know, to bounce theories and idea off of. So I said to myself, well, who can I have on that is, you know, has some background in UFO abduction, which is not my strong point by any means. Mm-hmm. So I know Peter and his sister, the late Helen Wheels, the punk rock singer, and they had an experience going back to when they were in their early teens living on Long Island. I think it was Long Island anyway. And Peter actually saw a number of craft in the sky, but his sister Helen went one step further and reported actually being taken on board the craft and examined. And so I thought that, you know, this would be a good segue to have Whitley on as the main guest and then Peter on as a panelist. But I didn't realize, of course, I knew that Peter had been Bud Hopkins' assistant for many, many years. And, of course, Whitley and Bud had knew each other and were involved in the abduction experience until they had a falling out of some sort. But I didn't realize until I had them on the air, actually, that Whitley had asked, I guess, Bud Hopkins if he knew somebody who could read the manuscript for Communion before it was published to get some feedback on it. And I guess at that point, early on, Peter met with Whitley, his wife, Anne, and their son, and read the manuscript. So it turned out that it was not only was it an interesting program, but entertaining. I do believe that you have to be both educational, but you have to kind of do it. There is a lighter side to all of this, you know, and you've got to see... You've got to see through the seriousness of this, and you know, make it something that's viable to all sorts of people. I mean, you have listeners who are 100% believers. You've got some people who just do it because they find the subject fascinating, and you have other people who are, you know, skeptics as far as the subject goes. And I've never been one to go out there and try to, you know, like shove something down somebody's throat. You either want to learn about that's why I can't be too big on disclosure, because everybody's disclosure is different than the next person, you know. I mean, what you believe in may be totally different than my theories and thoughts on this, and probably are. But anyway, so that was the, I guess, the concept of last night's show, Exploring the Bizarre on KCOR. And, you know, we do archive all the programs on YouTube. I have a YouTube channel. It's Mr. MR, Mr. UFO's Secret Files, and I think there are about 80 interviews and documentaries up there. You know, when I do some traveling, I take my camera with me, my camcorder, and shove it all in a bag and set it up on a rather shaky tripod. I call it unfair, unbalanced, unedited, and that's what it is. But some of the interviews have gotten, you know, Tom Dongo out there in Sedona has gotten something like 18,000 views, which is rather impressive, because some people don't get, you know, a couple hundred. But it all varies. But I think that we do provide a service, and so we go forth. And like you say, I've been doing this since probably about 1965. I started when I was 14 years old. I went out and bought a little printing press and started putting out a newsletter. And now I've got something like 225 books in print. If people want to know what they want, now, these are not books that I've written all by myself. I've co-authored them. I have my own company, Interlight Global Communications. So they're edited. You know, I'm the editor-in-chief, so I've made it easy for people to find out the title. All you have to do is go to Amazon and type in Timothy Beckley. That's Beckley, and you'll get all these very nice covers of books by Brad Steiger, T. Lobsick Wampa, Sean Castile, and you name it, and myself as well. So that's kind of the background on this. And anyway, I've been up for 15 minutes, and I've been talking all the time, so should be contested.
I like that. I like to put a guest on.
Come on, yes.
Takes the pressure off me. No, I loved last night when you were talking to Peter, because I've had great conversations with him. In fact, he just sent me a care package a couple weeks ago with some old press clippings from Helen when she was on tour, and a couple CDs of hers. And it, for me, being a musician and having that connection with Peter because of his sister, it's really a really cool thing for me.
You know, I used to promote you mentioned David Bowie, how I met David Bowie. I was a local promoter in the New York. I had my hands full even now, but back in the late 60s and early 70s, I was running the New York School of Occult Arts and Sciences, which was probably one of the first metaphysical centers in the United States. Now they're all over, you know, all over the country. I was publishing a newspaper called the UFO Review, which was a tabloid, about 32 pages, and I had a circulation of about 30. We printed 30,000 copies on it, and I was also promoting some of the local bands like Teenage Lust, the Magic Tramps, the Harlots of 42nd Street, one of the bands that was big at the time, or was emerging actually, was the New York Dolls, and the bass player Arthur Kane became a good friend of mine. In fact, I'm still in touch with his, he's deceased now, but with his wife, Barbara. In fact, I'm going to do an interview with her for a newspaper called Rockstar, which I write for, Confessions of a Rock and Roll Wife. And Arthur, you know, I would see him perform, of course, in his platform shoes and his glitter rock outfits in
yep.
all some of the bars in lower Manhattan. And then years later, when we were having our UFO conferences in Arizona and San Diego, he was in the audience. And I said, what a thrill this is. Here's a guy I came to see perform, and now he's coming to, you know, to hear all these lectures. So he became a good friend of mine. You know, we kind of reunited. And the Dots were just getting back together. Paul Morrissey, the British musician, had gotten them together to do their first tour, and I don't know how many, what, 25, 30 years or something like that. And Arthur had invited me backstage. They were going to play Randall's Island in Manhattan, and he died on my birthday, July 13th.
Oh.
So that was, you know, very, 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 very sad. But David Bowie I had met when he first came over here on tour as Ziggy Stardust. You know, the
yes.
And it was quite, you know, it was quite a performance. He always was a great showman, no doubt about that. Very, very talented performer, and he did have a genuine interest in UFOs. In fact, back in England, he had had a number of UFO sightings. He said, in fact, that these objects would come over pretty much on a regular basis. You could almost look at your clock every night and see them appear. And as a teenager, he actually was an editor of a Flying Saucer newsletter. And so, you know, as many disguises or appearances as his career changed over the years, he still even, you know, when he passed away, almost universally all the news reports said, well, that he's, you know, got back to the mothership, because that certainly was the catalyst to his career. And how I had met him was through this lady by the name of Wally Elmark, who was the White Witch of New York, and she was a speaker at my lecturer, did workshops at my School of Occult Arts and Sciences, but she also did a rock and roll column for magazine. I'm not sure whether it's still published today, because hardly any magazines are published anymore. It was a magazine called Circus, which was kind of the heavy metal version of Rolling Stone, but not that kind of politically, you know, motivated. It was about pop stars and glitter rockers like Mark Boland and Deep Purple, Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Oh, I love Deep Purple.
Black Sabbath, you know. So I went for years. I met all these musicians because I was writing for some of the tabloids. And I don't know, I just met everybody, and I went backstage and hung out for many years. And, you know, then rock and roll has faded away pretty much, and I'm just not quite into the music today. It's just not my cup of, you know, tea. But I got involved in all aspects of this kind of at the same time, and I'm glad I did, because I have a lot of fond memories out there, you know.
Oh, you know what? And I wish that I could have been around in that day back in New York and just experiencing some of that, because I love Blondie. I mean, I remember having Peter on my
Harry,
first
sure.
show. Oh my God. And he said that, Chris Stein and Deborah Harry were sitting, in the front row of one of his first lectures, Bud Hopkins. And it's like, how cool is that? It's just awesome.
Well, there are a number of I was on a show. We had Grant Cameron on. I don't know if you've had him on your show, but
Not
he
yet.
has the website Presidential UFO or whatever it's called.
Yes, he's
And
yeah.
of course, he believes that the aliens or ETs, or I call them ultra-terrestrials because I can't prove who they are or they aren't, are using music to kind of get their program across, especially young people, without necessarily having to come down and show themselves, in the sky or plant themselves on top of your apple orchard or something. So they kind of direct the messages to the youth of the world. Of course, some people see that as a negative, and other people would see this as a positive, thing.
That's
And
fascinating.
yeah, we have followed the UFO subject for, well, let's see, I had my first sighting in 1957. I was 10 years old, and
Wow.
nobody do any calculus out there. Come on,
Well,
and
won't be me.
anyway,
You're
so
deep.
it was two brightly lit objects in the sky. One of them directly over the place where I live, and one was across the street over an abandoned factory building. And these things just seemed to circle overhead for a period, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes. It was just after sunset, I guess twilight, I would call it, And somebody had come running up to the stoop where we were seated. In those days, we had no air conditioning, of course, so we would just sit outside until it cooled off and you could go back indoors. And we saw these objects in the sky. They were up above the cloud layer, so I can't say that I saw any landing gear, no little men or Martians, waved at me or anything. But the next day, there was an item in the newspaper to the effect that other people had witnessed this phenomena, but the authorities, whoever they might have been, said that it was nothing more unconventional than weather balloons. And I knew even at the age of 10, this wasn't a this was these objects were not weather balloons. They seemed to be under intelligent control, and the one across the street eventually just blinked out like somebody had pulled a light switch, and the other one continued to circle overhead for a while. But it was one of three sightings that I've had. I actually had the opportunity to communicate, I use that word in quotes, with an object that I saw over the town of Warminster in England. I had been invited over there. This would have been the early 1980s to speak at my friend Brinsley Lepore Trench, who was the Earl of Clancarty, had an unofficial group that was part of the House of Lords. Now, talk about UFO disclosure. He was ahead of everybody else along this line. They were trying to get the British government to release, or whatever material and information they had on the sightings. But of course, that never happened at that point. And after giving my little talk to his group there, I took the train out to Warminster. Now, Warminster was the place where everybody was going to have a UFO encounter. In fact, there was a fellow that I knew who was on in radio broadcasting in New York, and he had called me one day out of the blue. He used to read notices about our UFO lectures and stuff. He wasn't particularly interested in the subject. And he said, oh, he's going to England for a couple of weeks. Is there anything I might suggest that he do with in his spare time? So I told him to, maybe he might visit with my friend Arthur Shuttleworth, who was the editor of the local newspaper there. Anyway, Bryce Bond, went into the field. There was a group of people there, and I guess he saw a light off in the distance. And he went into the field and says that he went on board the craft and met some kind of Nordic-looking ETs, and when he came back to the United States, he quit his job at the radio station and went on to become a psychic healer and give lectures. And I mean, he just changed his whole profession because of this. And I was out there one night, and a couple of meteorites were shooting across the sky, you know. And then at one point there was this object, I would say the size of maybe a softball or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Kind of that's large.
Up in the sky, you know. Now, we're in the middle of a field, and there's no house lights or street lamps or anything like that. So I wasn't convinced, though, it was a UFO. But Arthur, who was with me, says, "Ah, you know, that's one of them." And I said, "Well, Arthur, how could you be sure?" And he says, "Well, you wait and see." So he went to the trunk of his car and came out with a, I wouldn't say flashlight, a torchlight, you know, something you would have on the mm-hmm. side of the road if you were trying to prevent an accident, you know, if your car stalled or something. And he pointed this thing and started flashing it at the object in the sky. And whenever he flashed at it, the object would seem to do a little bit of maneuvering back and forth as if it were being played out by the hands of a puppet master or something. And he gave me the torchlight, and I did the same thing and got the same kind of response from it. So I could say that I think that I actually communicated with something in the sky, but I don't know, you know, to this day, if you ask me what UFOs are, people expect for me to say, you know, that they come from Mars or Venus or from Alpha Centauri, and I can't tell you that. It's something that has had a profound effect on hundreds of thousands of people all over the planet, right?
Right.
But other people react to it in totally different ways. Some people see it as a spiritual phenomenon, a religious experience, a symbol of something. You know, I mean, it is a mystery, and I guess that's why it's so intriguing. So the concept that somebody should go on, you know, the 6 o'clock news and give disclosure is impossible. Because how do you explain it? What disclosure do you want? You know, and how do you explain this to the general public? It's impossible because we can't explain it to ourselves in most cases.
Right. And that is really true. And I think you bring up a good point. I mean, we don't know where this is coming from. I mean, is this something that has been with us since the beginning of mankind and we haven't had the ability to process it? Or is this something that is extraterrestrial? I mean, I think there's probably a combination of both, but we don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so, there could be a few time travelers in there. And I do believe that some of the early, at least early reports of the late 1940s, including perhaps the crash at Roswell, and I know I could be hung for saying this or crucified. I do believe that some of these craft that were going down were made here on Earth and were probably the result of German technology. Because if you remember, after World War II, as part of Project Paperclip, we brought over about 5,000 former Nazi engineers and rocket scientists and
right.
what have you. And so I believe, well, I believe that the government would rather have you believe that these things are, if you're going to believe at all, they would rather have you believe that they're extraterrestrial because they certainly don't want to acknowledge the fact that they were responsible for bringing over all these war criminals. You know, here some of them were put to death in Nuremberg, and others were brought over here and made, I guess, honorary, you know, citizens and scientists, and like nothing had ever happened, and that's not quite the case. And also, too, you know, in some of the, it's very interesting, if you go back and check some of these early reports of the contactees that had meetings, well, they said that some of the crew members that they spoke to had German accents, which I don't think most people realize.
Interesting. No, I haven't heard that.
Yes. Oh, well, my check on the report. One that comes to mind offhand is Reinhold Schmidt. Now, Reinhold Schmidt was a grain buyer. He was on his way to Kearney, Nebraska one evening, and he got involved with a UFO counter and went on board a ship, and they talked to him with a German accent. Also, too, and now I know most people are critical, including myself, of George Adamski, who was one of the original contactees. But In the incident that took place, I guess, what was it, in 1950 or 51, where he claims that he actually saw, and supposedly he had seven or eight witnesses who signed affidavits to this, he saw a craft land, and this being from another planet who was very Aryan looking, stood over 6 feet tall, had blonde mm-hmm. hair and blue or green eyes, Orthon. Yeah, I mean, that's the name that he gave this individual. But interestingly enough, if you go to the internet and do a Google search, you will find the drawings or plaster of Paris, photographs of the plaster of Paris cast of the imprints that his boots or shoes made in the sandy soil. And in the middle of the boot print is a swastika. Now, how do you account for that?
Oh,
and also, too, some of the German drawings that were made by the nine women who were channeling, supposedly beings from another planet.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the illustrations that they did of these crafts that predated Adamski's visions by many, many years, you will see a very marked similarity between the crafts that he photographed and the drawings made while they were in a trance-like state. I don't know. It's an interesting concept. To me, if these objects did crash land in Roswell or another place, there seemed to me there would be more, evidence than mummies in the sand or something along that line. You know, a couple of slides floated around here there that had no legitimacy to them. and there really isn't. You know, it's all kind of secondhand word of mouth, and when you get down to it, most of the witnesses can be easily discredited. And it's not to say that all of them can be. I mean, something certainly happened there, but we really don't know what. But anyway, that's just and then you've got your range of you talk about Ted Phillips now. Ted Phillips, of course, was an assistant of Dr. J. Allen Hynek, the astronomer, Dr. Swampgas, formerly with Blue Book. And they all started out as hardcore, what I call nuts and bolts, researchers. But over the course of the years, even Dr. Hynek changed his opinion. And if you ask Ted Phillips today, or go back and listen to the interviews on Mr. UFO Secret Files that I have up there on YouTube, you'll find that he stopped believing that most of these things were physical craft from other planets quite a number of years ago, and now believes, as I do, that it is a psychic manifestation of some sort. We can't really put our fingers on it, but it's something perhaps that comes from a parallel dimension or another realm or another reality, and it's all spooky and it's all unexplained. But that's a UFO phenomenon, and I guess if it were just strict, craft from other planets, we would have found that out a long time ago. These things just don't be. I don't even care if you're dealing with a foreign or an alien technology. It doesn't fit. The patterns of events that take place are just too bizarre and too strange to fill the boots of these being craft from other planets. Sorry.
Right. I think the more I look into this, the more I have the same type of opinion. I mean, it is just. I live in Skinwalker Ranch territory, and so, that's a prime place.
You're in Utah?
So I am in Utah, and I'm 2 hours away from Skinwalker, and that's a place that, we get, with MUFON, we get reports up there. I have lots of friends that have done work up there and people that have lived there for decades, and, I mean, talk about something that nobody could put their finger on. You've got a little bit of Bigfoot, everything that you can ever want at one location. And, Ted Phillips, from what I have listened to and read about him, I mean, he believes in the Marley Woods. These are the same locations that have the same types of phenomenon. And so it's just fascinating.
We have in Sedona, Arizona, the Bradshaw Ranch, which is there's an interview that I did with Tom Dongo that runs in like an hour and a half, and he has a magnificent collection of photographs of UFOs, orbs, and all kinds of strange shapes and wonders in the sky and on the ground, a lot of them which was taken around this a property that is now, I think, owned by the government, but then I heard recently it wasn't owned by the government anymore, but still strange things are going on out in Sedona. It's one of the places where you probably have a higher chance to see a UFO or encounter something weird, certainly if you're a little bit more sensitive than others.
So why do you think some people are more sensitive than others to seeing this?
Well, you know, now growing up, it could be partly hereditary, but I don't mean that it's necessarily in your DNA. When I was growing up, for example, my mother and my grandmother were more prone to use their intuition and were more, I mean, my grandmother actually kept a diary. She was from the old country, from Hungary, you know, and she kept a diary of events that took, dreams and events that took place in their home. In fact, her brother-in-law, as I understand it, predicted his own passing. He had been in a boat accident. I guess the boat that he was on while he was fishing overturned, and he contracted pneumonia, and he predicted that he would be the third person to die in the village, and he named the people that would pass away before him. And then
Oh my gosh.
That's pretty frightening, right? And
yes.
And then my mother was dabbled with the Ouija board and paranormal events. And so I kind of, now, on my father's side of the family, it was just the opposite. They were a strict Southern Baptist. And even though my grandfather had apparently a sighting of a headless horseman behind the barn in Kentucky, I mean, somebody maybe from the Confederate Army or the Union Army that had their heads blown off, but they would never talk about that because it wasn't part of their cultural and religious upbringing, you know.
Right.
So I don't know. I guess it's just kind of some people are more open to it, and other people, even if they had it happen to them as something that, you know, had transpired in their lives, they wouldn't talk about it because they see it as being a very negative thing, and so it could just pass them by, either pass them by, or if you were, let's say, a spirit or an entity of some kind, why would you go to somebody who wouldn't, you know, acknowledge it? I would think,
right.
I don't know. That's just, you know, it's just a thought. There's nothing. Again, there's really no, answers to this. There's no wrongs or no rights. Everybody has an individual opinion on this, and your opinion is just as good as mine. And in fact, that's why I kind of hate to see the backstabbing that goes on in the field and name-calling and stuff like that, because I don't think it's necessary. Just because I don't have your particular belief structure doesn't mean to me that someone else can't believe something else. And so we should look into all aspects of this.
I think we should too, and that's been, you know, I mean, you've been doing this for decades, and I've been kind of an outside observer, and just recently in the past couple of years really gotten my feet wet with this, but that's been the one thing that I've seen.
If I can turn the tables on you for a minute.
What
made you decide to start a broadcast? I mean, there must have been something in your life that propelled you into getting on the air one day and interviewing people?
You know, absolutely. I my whole life I've been studying this, and, you know, I had very interesting experiences as a child. I lived in a haunted house like you did. I've always had weird paranormal stuff happen around me. And then in 2013, I began noticing these orange orbs over Salt Lake. And to me, I just, you know, I had several friends witness this, and it was just, why aren't other people noticing? What is this? Why is it over the airspace we've got the flight path to the international airport, all of these questions, and I wanted to find out what was going on. And then I began investigating and found, talked to Peter Davenport several times. He was amazing. And then I got involved with MUFON and became the state director here. And just, to me, I feel like whatever happened to me was leading me into this path, because I feel this is the most important thing that I will ever do, is try to do what I can to bring awareness to this subject, and then make people feel better about talking about their experiences, because nobody should be ashamed of what they have experienced, and they shouldn't feel like they have to hide in a closet.
Well, have you had like abduction experiences, or?
You know, I don't. Oh, you know what? I've had many interesting things that it would kind of turn a little light bulb on in my head, but I can't say that I've ever woken up and seen an entity standing by my bed. I mean, I've heard voices. I've by the side of my bed. I've seen orbs. Lots of things. But it's like, where does the paranormal come in? Where does the UFO phenomena take off? I really don't know. But it does, you know, you do put that in the back of your mind with all of the other experiences that lead you up, you know, to where you are. It's just a trip.
Well, all we can do is to continue, I guess, our search, and I would say educate other people, but I'm not sure exactly. The reason I think I do this and why I'm propelled to do my shows and all. Well, I was always on the other side of the microphone. You know, for 50 years, I was the guest. And then I said to myself one day, Jesus, I'm tired of answering the questions. There are things that I want to know, you know. And I had, of course, edited a lot of magazines and publications. I did the UFO Review. And for 11 years, I was the editor-in-chief of UFO Universe, the newsstand magazine, into the bottom of the publishing business that just fell out. I mean, the only magazine, actually printed magazine in English, devoted to UFOs, believe it or not, is the Australian Ufologist. I mean, can you believe that? You've got to go to Australia to find a printed magazine on the subject. You know, everything, 14 times in England, but that's not UFOs, really. And when they do run a UFO article, it's fairly negative. To some degree. So there's no other printed magazine on the subject anymore. At one point, you could go into a newsstand, and there were five or six different magazines, some better than others, you know, but they all ran their course, and then the bottom of the publishing business just gave out. Magazines are now, you know, you can't find any outside of maybe a Cosmopolitan or something. You know, it's got a lot of advertising.
Oh dear!
You're not going to find anything on this subject. You know?
Isn't that sad? I mean, it's so. This is. I think to me, it feels like we're kind of at this pivotal time where the subject could. You know, we've got an older generation that is unfortunately leaving us, and it could very well kind of go by the wayside if we don't energize or mobilize a younger generation.
Yeah. Well, I've never been able to read much of a manuscript on the ebook or whatever you want to call. I just can't I can't concentrate enough to want the physical book in my hand.
I do
and
too.
And I like the smell of the ink and the feel of the paper and the gloss of the cover and. So that's what, you know, our books, like I said, we have about 230. And we put them out in both editions. We put them out in the print edition, and we put them out as e-books as well. But I prefer the printed ones myself. But so where's this all going?
Boy, I don't know where it – I hope it's going – to me, I feel like something is – happening. Something's coming to a head. And, you know, I mean, Lord knows you've probably heard that for a long time.
Erica, I was just going to say that, but I was biting my tongue.
I know. I'll say it for you.
Yeah, all right. Yes. I mean, going back even before, okay, I think I bought my first magazine on the newsstand. It was called something like Outer Space Secrets. It was a red, it was a yellow back, red red, yellow, and black. It was a terrible newsprint-like magazine, you know, with some really stupid articles, but a lot of the fake photographs that are released today. And then I went out, I guess, when I bought Fate magazine. That would have been maybe around 1957. I guess I was about 10 years old. Then I ran into Ray Palmer's Flying Saucers from, you know, other worlds. And everybody was talking about, oh, you know, it's only going to be, you know, a couple of months before we know the secret of the saucers, and the secrets are still with us, and probably there are a few more secrets than there ever were before.
True. Dang it, but don't you think, though, with the age of all the, you know, our technology, that now we've got the ability to share information so quickly that it might, something might come to a head, I don't know, work with me, because
well,
I just...
no, you know, I mean, of course we would all hope that, but look at all the terribly fake UFO photos and videos that you find on YouTube, you know, and it's gotten to the point where you don't know which are legit. It's hard to decipher which are legitimate, and you know, the closer they are to the lens, the more likely they are to be fake. And the more they are, but again, they could be, you know, lanterns or airplanes or birds or God knows what, you know. I mean, not that there aren't a lot of good videos and photos there, but again, it's up to the individual. I've always said to people, you know, like, you can't pick one case and say this is the ultimate proof. Maybe the closest would be the Bentwaters, you know, the Rendlesham Forest in the UK. But even then, you've got 80 witnesses, and everybody tells their story slightly differently, which is okay, because if you were in at a crime scene or at an accident, you would probably give the police officer a variety of information that might differ than the person that was, you know, 100 feet away from you. But it's so difficult to really put your finger on anything and say this is it and there isn't any more. And I think that people that's one thing I like about Whitley Strieber is that he sees the big picture.
He does.
And a lot of the people that are involved in this don't see the big picture, and it's certainly a panoramic view. That's the best way that I can actually put it.
You know, and I agree with you. I think that's been interesting for me to come into the field and know that, you know, sometimes we investigate one case and, you know, you can say, okay, yay or nay, but you need to look at the bigger picture and see that there are patterns that are emerging. And so what do you do with those patterns instead of just, you know, after one case it's done and you're not looking at that again, do you know what I mean? I mean, I just think that we miss out on a lot by wanting to be a nuts and bolts.
I remember one time I went into a newsstand and I asked the news dealer, did he carry UFO Universe? And he said, well, what was that? And I said, well, it's a magazine about unidentified flying objects. And the fellow looked at me and he says to me, well, what could you possibly write about that? You know, long enough to sustain the publication, and I realized that he didn't even know anything about the subject, so there was no reason to carry on a conversation with him. But you know, I said to myself on the way out the door, well, geez, what can't you write about them? Because UFOs are unidentified, and so it's open to all kinds of speculations and ideas and theories. And after 50 years, this is where we are. I mean, we know that something has been interacting with our species here, and they've been doing it for probably thousands, if not since the beginning of time, thousands of years, but maybe even before, you know, before recorded history. There's something here that is invisible to the human eye under most circumstances, but under some circumstances makes its presence known very strongly and has a profound influence on some people, and I think on society in general, while other people can just totally ignore it. I mean, they just want to, you know, hide from the fact known. no matter what evidence that you show them, they just were not going to accept this. And that to me is fine too. I mean, I've never been, again, my background in this has come from being a journalist, I would think. I mean, I was a stringer for all the tabloids, you know, the Inquirer and the Globe, and most of them that are out of the...
And the Inquirer, I just have to say, they did some great stuff with regards to UFOs.
Well, they did for a while, and now they haven't touched the subject in years and years. I can't think of the last time they ran an article that even mentioned UFOs, but it was a different publisher, it was a different corporation, it was a different time. And I interviewed a lot of the celebrities, and one of the things that I always asked was, have you ever had any paranormal or UFO experiences? And a lot of them had experiences that they were more than happy to relate. And some of them just said, well, you know, I'll tell you off the cuff, but don't repeat it, or, you know, I'd rather not get into that subject at all. I remember I met Tracy Torme at a MUFON conference, I think, in Denver. And he did the movie. Well, of course, he did Sliders on TV. He was the creator of that. And he did Fire from the Sky with Travis Walton. And one of his lectures or panel discussions, I went up to him and I said, I introduced myself and I said, you know, I did an interview with your dad, Mel Torme.
Oh.
Yeah, the very famous singer, you know.
Oh, I loved Mel Torme.
Yeah, and I did an interview with his dad, and he told me about his UFO sighting that he had had while walking his dog in or near Central Park. Now, it was not a spectacular sighting by any means, to be honest with you, but he was a well-known singer and performer, and back when I wrote the article. And so Tracy said to me, he said, oh, well, you're the fellow that wrote the article. My father said that was, over the years, that was probably the, not the best article, but the most legitimate article that anybody had ever written, with the exact quotes of what he had said. Because most people don't realize this. You know, I carried a tape recorder, and I would tape the interviews. And the Inquirer would actually have a fact checker who would want to hear the tape to make sure that you didn't, you know, make up the story. Now, that's not to say that, you know, some stories or some things didn't get by them, because obviously it did. Now, there was a report in there that Walter Cronkite had a UFO sighting or something along that line, and I believe there was some litigation over that, and he apparently never made those statements. So every once in a while, everybody is bound to make a mistake, especially if you're printing, you know, 100 articles a week. But everything I ever did for the newspaper, they did check it out as best they possibly could.
That is amazing that Mel Torme had a UFO experience. But I just have to, the more I find out about the connection with musicians and, you know, artists, I mean, it's incredible. Right. And Mel Torme was a hero of mine because I love jazz. I'm a jazz singer.
How about Buddy Rich, the drummer? Now, actually, Buddy Rich had a number of sightings. I ran into him. He was a member, a friend of Dr. Hynek, and I ran into him in the first class in a plane one time, I think, going to Detroit. I wasn't in first class, but he was. But I had met him before that, you know. And he had a couple of UFO sightings. I think maybe one, I get his report confused with Sammy Davis Jr.'s sighting. I think Sammy Davis Jr. was out in Palm Springs, and Buddy Rich was in Georgia. But maybe it was the other way around. Somebody will have to verify this in my book. I have originally it was called UFOs Among the Stars, but I updated the book recently. And it's now Shirley MacLaine meets the Palladians. You can check all these celebrities in there, including a lot of rock musicians and Deep Purple, Patrick Mraz. In fact, Patrick Mraz used to play a keyboard with I think it was oh, let me see, yes, yeah, yes. He came to one of our conferences one time and gave a private little concert. You know, I, I think he had a, he had quite. I never really questioned him too deeply about his UFO sightings, but obviously he was into it enough to come to the show and do it do a impromptu concert, you know, at midnight or something. When,
oh my gosh, what a cool experience!
Yeah, well, you know, like if you've been doing this for 50 years, something good has got to come out of it.
Oh, come on. I think you've had your share of good experiences.
Well, I know. You know, I have. And I must say, you know, people say, oh, you know, aren't you afraid of being ridiculed or laughed at? No, because I'm the one that makes people laugh, I would hope. But no, you know why? Because I always had other things I could fall back on, you know. I'd never, if I go to like a, you know, somebody says, oh, how about a, you know, like cocktail parties. Well, I've never been to one cocktail party in my life. That's not quite my, you know, social strata there. But, you know, I never pushed it down anybody's throat. If I was among a group, they knew who I was, actually, because a lot of these people had my books on their, you know, bookshelves and stuff like that. So I kind of met them on an equal, you know, equal footing.
Isn't it? So did you have groupies?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I don't know if you would call them... I've had some wild experiences. In fact, if I ever have the opportunity, I want to write a book called We All Had a Really Good Time, because that's kind of my philosophy on life, is in order to make it through life, you've got to kind of have a good time. And you must know who Edgar Winter is, right?
Yes.
He did the album. It was the two albino brothers, Edgar and Johnny, who passed away a couple of years ago. Anyway, Edgar Winter had a best-selling song album back in the 70s called Frankenstein, and they still play the you know, it's the keyboard, no vocals to it, but there's a song on there on the album called We All Had a Really Good Time, and I'm on that cut. Now, I'm not playing the guitar, I'm not playing the drums or anything like that. The band invited some friends, including Bette Midler, myself, and a couple of the Chambers brothers. They put they put us in a recording studio with a couple of bottles of Johnny Walker and turned on the microphone. And if you play that song, you can hear people, you know, clapping and laughing and having a good time. And that's the background of the of that particular Johnny Winter cut on the Frankenstein album. We All Had a Really Good Time. And so that's kind of my philosophy on all of this. I mean, it's UFOs, but you've got to have other interests in life.
UFOs, you know, and babes and music. And but you know what? That's what life's about. Like, to me, I mean, I look back at my life and I've had so many cool experiences being a musician, having, you know, singing at the Olympics and all of the things that I've had.
I understand that you are coming on to the station that I broadcast from, KCOR.
You know, I think that I am going to. I feel very comfortable, and it's so nice to have a professional setting, and I really like the fact that I won't have to produce a show or be on Blog Talk. This is so great.
Well, be on everything. I don't know. You know, I tell people, get out there. As long as you give me and the station credit, repost it, put it up. I don't know. You know, like, get the word out. It's not like, I always tell people I am the king of all unpaid media. I mean, good living publishing and everything, but I do a lot of things just because I enjoy doing them. And in fact, my friend Maria DeAndrea and I had an incident in my place in Manhattan recently where there was a fire. So I left with my coat, my cell phone, and two Kindles, and I've been staying out here on Long Island so I get the heat back on in the building and clean the soot, out. And I do it just because I enjoy doing a lot of things and meeting people. That's why I decided to do a show. I was tired of being asked the question, and since I wasn't doing the magazines anymore, I had no way of getting, you know, input on this, so I figured geez, you know, there are all these podcasts out there. I could do it, you know, just as good, if not better than some of them. And the show has been pretty successful. You know, it takes a while, but we're building up an audience. And we've got some great guests on. I have a philosophy about this. In fact, there's an article floating around there. If you go to Amazon.com and type in my name, I actually have an author's page there, which has my blog and photos and all these books and all listed. And I have a philosophy about this. If you're doing a show, you can have on your regular, you know, your regular and your favorites and all, but you got to give, you know, some newcomers a chance too, because there's a lot of viable information floating around out there that we desperately need to access.
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I every day I talk to somebody, you know, I mean, I talk to amazing people like you, you know, renowned researchers, yada, 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 but then you talk to somebody that has had a lifetime full of experiences and has never talked about it in public, or, you know, you talk to somebody, I mean, you just make all these amazing connections, and it's just, wow, I feel like this is such a blessing and a trip, and it's exciting, and I love it.
How long have you been doing the show now?
You know what, I've been doing this show, oh my gosh, since July, so not that long, but I've done radio off and on and done voiceovers and different things, and I love that, and I love, it's just cool. I mean, I go to bed every night just pinching myself thinking, did I really have a conversation with this person? Did I really, you know, make a connection about, you know, the orange orb phenomenon, which is a big thing that I've been researching with MUFON, and I love it. I love my life.
Well, unfortunately, I never got to interview Edgar Mitchell.
I know.
I mean, I've heard him many times, and I was in the same room with him. I think I probably asked him a question or two, but I wouldn't consider that really a full-fledged interview, you know, and there are still a lot of people that I'd like, you know, like to speak to out there. And, of course, just like our rock musician friends who are getting up there in age, like Paul Kantner from the Jefferson Starship passed away,
yes.
You know.
And
we got to get some of these people and record all this information and make it a matter of history. We did a tribute show a couple of weeks ago on Exploring the Bizarre about my friend, the late Gray Barker, who, of course, wrote the book They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers, which was the classic book on the Men in Black and the silencing of Alan K. Bender. And we had on curator of the Gray Barker collection, which is housed in the Clarksburg, West Virginia Library. So we're always out there looking for a little different angle, and that's my main purpose, I think, is just to kind of record this for posterity and to make it available to future generations, because there are a lot of people who are newcomers in this who just are not aware of what has come before. And so I want to make it available to them before I go on to the higher plane,
which will be in 30 years, so we won't have to worry about that. But, you know, I mean, it's true. I mean, it's so important to pass on this knowledge. And I just, you know, I think about how many people, you know, I mean, in their 80s, 90s that have had sightings that have still not talked about them. And it's just so important to reach out and try to get any information that we can and share it with people.
Well, I have about 40 file drawers filled with personal letters. People wrote more back years ago, decades ago, than they do now. Yet, you know, people on the internet, if they answer you, you know, you're lucky if you get a couple of sentences back. Well, people used to spend the time to write, you know, 10-page letter, handwritten 10-page letters. And, of course, we also exchanged information via cassette tape, or reel-to-reel in those days. You know. Anyway, that's my story.
Well, isn't that beautiful, though, to have, I mean, how cool is that you can go to your files and you can look at all of these handwritten letters from people. I mean, I love that, you know, and I have so many files too. I can't even imagine how many files you have, but it's so important.
Well,
and I love
someday,
everybody.
Someday we'll have to exchange files. Anyway, I'm glad being on the program, and I do hope you come on as a guest on Exploring the Bizarre some evening.
You know, I absolutely will, and I think that you are so fantastic, and I look forward to learning
bless
more
you,
from you.
Bless you.
You know,
bless
really.
You, what can I say?
Exactly,
anyway,
and I love it. Thank you.
I thank you for the opportunity to share this hour with your listeners, and I will talk
absolutely.
To you later.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful night. Thank you.
You
take care.
Remember,
bye-bye.
It's Mr. UFO's Secret Files on YouTube.
Yes, and Exploring the Bizarre. Thank you. Have a good night. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Bye-bye. And to all of my lovely listeners out there, I feel so blessed that you guys are following UFO Audit. I do have a new home that I'm going to be moving to pretty quickly, and I will keep you informed about that. I have lots of good things on the horizon, and I love connecting with everybody. You can find out those updates on UFO Audit on Facebook, and then you can also check out my website, which is theufoaudit.com, and I will be posting updates and all sorts of exciting things about my adventures and research that I'm finding out about. I have so many wonderful things to share with you, and I hope that you share things with me. I'm grateful to have Tim Beckley on, and next week I've got Reagan Lee on, who does the Orange Orb blog. She is so amazing, and it's nice to see a woman in the field with a lot of integrity and who's had interesting sightings that she shares with the world. I am doing a one-hour show tonight because I've had somebody in my family that has passed away, and it is time for me to go enjoy my family and pay tribute to that person. But I love you guys, and I will be here next week and make announcements about my show. And all of you, I hope you have an absolutely fantastic weekend. See you next week.